Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travelled to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast would not happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to become a socio, to become one of our members. And get an extra big interview every month, plus loads of bonus content. So go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter, patreon.com/Graham Hunter, and we'll bring you joy.
League Cup final. Blackburn managed by Graham Souness, favourite of mine. Spurs managed by, okay, we share initials, if you've listened to this series, Glenn Hoddle. I was so supporting Blackburn, and thank you. To the coming player of that moment, Matt Janssen, scorer, maker of the winner, made my day. The reason that Matt Janssen isn't to the forefront of your football memory from the early to mid-2000s is that he had a dreadful accident, which wasn't his fault, in Rome, doing Gregory Peck, Audrey Hepburn, skittishly scooting around the Eternal City on a moped until, well, very near tragedy struck. It ruined the remainder of his career, and it left him with demons that he had to fight with all his and a very special sports psychologist's efforts in order to resurrect himself. He's an interesting man. He's going to be a good coach. He's been a great guest on The Big Interview. He was a terrific footballer. But what a life. What a tough life. Matt Janssen, enjoy.
We're privileged to be in the presence of somebody that I used to watch and admire, Matt Janssen. Very welcome to The Big Interview.
Thank you very much.
I do like what you've done with your garden. I know this is a recorded thing, people can't see behind you, but the spiffing with the big trees and the beautiful long fairways. This is a place that you frequent, right?
Yeah, I used to be a member of the golf course, but I'm still a member of the gym, which I don't get to too many times nowadays.
But Mottram Hall, is that where we are?
Mottram Hall, yeah.
Beautiful day, midsummer. Horses. I don't bet often. But when I go to sort of the course, I tend to win more because I look at the parade ring, and I always have this feeling that I can look at the horses going round. National Hunt rather than flat is my thing, and I always imagine that I can see elegance and balance and character. Now that might be total nonsense, and the fact that bookies win more than punters suggests that it is. But I remember when I began watching you, which wasn't at Carlisle. It was at Crystal Palace. Largely it was in television, but I was reporting on English football then, so I would come to some of your games, Palace and Blackburn. And that's what I remember thinking about watching you in your prime, that you were a really unusual mix of elegance. There was a balance and athleticism and a naturalness about your play. There was a toughness, and you were willing to put yourself... The mix of thoroughbred and able to put yourself in all kinds of sticky situations.
I'm not going to disagree with you at all. You keep on going if you want.
Hold on, I'll move the oats out of the way.
No,
Did you understand what I'm trying to get at?
I think I just grew and grew in confidence, and that helps. I used to constantly as a kid fall over, bang my head, stand behind a swing, get knocked down, and whether it's stupidity or bravery, I used to put my head where it sometimes got knocked, and maybe that helped with me in the football, with the, especially 20 years ago when a tackle was a tackle and a and an arm across your face was very common. So maybe the bravery or stupidity came from growing up, really, and having numerous bangs to the head.
And although you would class yourself as left-footed, I thought you were reasonably ambidextrous, and that you had an awful lot of ways to score. And the things that probably stood out most about you was you were able to do elite things sometimes, passing, scoring, set up. But you did score goals of wonderful quality, and they seemed to come naturally to you.
Yeah, I loved scoring goals. I loved setting people up. It didn't happen overnight, though, I don't think. I think it was just a rise of starting at Carlisle, wanting to get into the first team at Carlisle United, doing that and my confidence growing. Then suddenly I've got interest from Newcastle, Man United, Crystal Palace,
Juventus.
That was slightly later, but then I grew in confidence, ended up going to Crystal Palace, got young player of the season in the last 4 or 5 months, and my ego and confidence grew again. Then they got into financial difficulty, so they had to sell me again, and the interest was, like you say, Juventus came in for me with the likes of Zidane and Del Piero and etc. So my confidence just grew and grew and grew, and I think that helped me with my ability on the field, that I had that much confidence. Give me the ball, I want to show off, score great goals or set people up comfortably. I think it stemmed from me just growing that ego and getting that self-belief.
You're about to play for England and potentially about to go to the World Cup. Your brother-in-law's kid...
Oh, my sister's kid. My brother's
sister's kid. Had a bug.
Yeah, well, they lived next door to me. He'd finished university and he ended up sorting out my affairs, became my agent, really.
Yeah.
And they lived... We had properties in city centre Manchester, two apartments next to each other. And his kid, Eden, had gastroenteritis. But anyway, we were at Cardon Park. We were playing Paraguay at Anfield, and I was there. Training went really well. I was partnered up front with Michael Owen.
This is the Ericsson era, right, for England? Ericsson's the coach.
Ericsson's the coach, yeah. Training went brilliant the first day, and then during the evening I felt awful, virtually hallucinating, just sick. It was coming out of both ends just constantly. I was on the toilet, and literally I couldn't hardly get out of bed to go to the toilet. I was dizzy. I was so bad. And Sven came up, saw me, and just says, "Look, take as long as you need." I ended up, my brother-in-law came and picked me up. I ended up in hospital, went back to the apartment where the Crystal Palace doctor came, put me on a drip, but it doesn't get any better. He put a needle into my arm to put me on the drip, and it came out the other side. He said, "Oh, we're good job, I'm not scared of needles." But
no.
We'll do that again, shall we?
You should have just said acupuncture.
But I felt, I felt so bad anyway. So that was minuscule to how bad I'd felt. And then some reports were on social media or whatever it might have been that said, "Oh, you should give your right arm to play for England and this and that." But I couldn't. I'd have been a disgrace. I could hardly walk, let alone kick a ball. So I ended up missing out on that game.
Or what would have been a full England debut, and this was in build-up in preparation of what should have been the summer of your life.
Yeah,
did effectively become, in a different way, the summer of your life, because this would have been a chance to play for England at the World Cup in Japan and South Korea, right?
Yes.
And am I right in saying it, legitimately, you'd forced your way into being in that squad, even though you're a late mention, and I think you were told that you were going to go, and eventually it's Mark Keown that goes, but had you played at the level you were at against Paraguay, it's fair to say there's a good chance you'd have been on that plane, right?
Well, I've got my suit. I've got my England suit in preparation to
measured up,
got it. Yeah, I had the David Beckham pre-launch party invitations. We played Liverpool a day before the official squad was being announced.
Yeah.
that we're going to the World Cup, and Sven-Göran Eriksson was there. Said to he'd met Souness in between, and Souness came to me and said, "By the way, you're going to the World Cup. Sven's just told me to tell you not to get injured." So I played against Liverpool. I think we lost 4-3 in the end, but I scored and I played well.
So that little bug in your head about, like, don't get injured, you just ignore that and
play. You play
the match as some way.
Yeah, you know, stand behind a swing, etc. But, so I just played well. We unfortunately got beat 4-3, but, I'm on the way back home from Liverpool. I'm going to the World Cup. I went to the World Cup the next day. Next day in the morning, we came in for a warm down, a cool down, recovery jog. Souness says, you can stay in and look at your name being announced on the... But you're in, don't worry about it, you're in. You can come out with us and do a warm down, or you can stay in here and be proud of what you've achieved. There was a delay on the team being announced, and further delay, and then it got further delayed. So I went out and did a job with that, did a warm down.
There's no dread in the stomach at this stage, going, well, hold on, where's the news? It's still like, it's coming.
Yeah, it was just a postpone for media or whatever it was. Continued to be delayed, and then on the way home, driving back to Manchester from Brockhall, they announced the team over the radio, and my name wasn't on it, and I must have misheard that. Carried on, then my phone started going, they've taken Martin Keown instead of you. So my agent's frantically, not agent, my brother-in-law, is trying to find out exactly what's happened, and they opted to take cover rather than myself.
So emblematic of that Ericsson, Torgrip, Rain, caution, conservatism, no risk, in team talks, in tactics, in his personality, how he spoke. I mean, there's not an attack on him, but I think that as much as it cost you, that's so emblematic of what Sven was like.
Yeah, I mean, it was frustrating, but at that time I'm thinking, I've had a great season, I've scored in the cup final, we've beaten Spurs in the cup final, my time's coming. As soon as they come back next season, I'll play for England. So that's what I believed, and that's where I was at that particular moment.
Do that pinch, I mean, that pinch is having that's a very robust psychology to have.
But I think
I know a lot of players that would have hurt deeply, and it would have taken them a long, long time to get over. But you weren't in that.
I was gutted, yeah. Obviously, you're frustrated, disappointed, and you're thinking, I'm going to the World Cup. I think my wife, Lucy, she was my girlfriend at that time. Her dad had got permission for her to postpone or delay her degree.
A final exam. Yeah.
To come out to the Baden-Baden or something like that, and got criticised for it, but she was going to come to that because it was fact I was going. And then at the 11th hour, obviously, they've changed their mind and went with caution, like you say, rather than risk. But yes, you're disappointed, yes, you're frustrated. 24, I'd had a good season.
That's what I mean. You're able to, this isn't you rationalising it now. You were able to rationalise it, feel confident about, yeah, my time's coming.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
I think that's pretty strong.
I don't know. That's what I felt, and I felt my time's coming. I'm still going to play for England. That's your dream. You know, your dream is to play for your country. I've done it in the 21s. I've never seen my dad cry, and he said that the only time you'll ever see me shed a tear is when you make your debut for England. And I've never been able to do it. I've never been able to make him cry.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Where's the suit? I think it'll be in the cellar somewhere. I'm frustrated with it. So, you know, you just...
Did you go to Beckham's party?
I didn't go. I didn't feel like it was... I didn't feel it was right. I've got the invitation, but...
This is the one where they had Marquise, Cast of Thousand. And was Elton John not performing such?
Yeah, it was a pre-launch party. So, yeah, I didn't feel that... I didn't feel that I was... If I wasn't going, I wasn't part of the team. So, but my time will come.
You know, one of the reasons that we're here is because of the timing of what you've done. And it's worth pointing out to everybody that I've read Matt Jansen. I should say Matt Jansen, because you're of Dutch descent, right?
Yes.
The family's of Dutch descent. The book is very good. You've written your autobiography. It's a terrific read, but it hinges on something pretty central to your life, and it's what happens next. Therefore, I can't deny that I've got, you know, privileged access to details and that I've read it. And the subheading of your autobiography is what was, what is, and what might have been. And the reason that it's necessary to use that is what happens that summer. And I must admit that, I've said this to you before we started taping, I found that the book's entertaining. I'd really encourage people to read it for dozens of reasons. It's very, very funny in certain parts. It's really detailed. It seems to me very honest. A lot of sports autobiographies kind of shade detail on it. Such and such happened, but I better not name them. But you tell it as it, at least as far as the reader is concerned, you tell it as it was. But I find it also, it's quite a difficult, I wouldn't say traumatic read, but it's an upsetting read because of the injustice of what's going to happen next and because of the frustration and knowing that it robbed you of things, it robbed us, the viewers, of things, because, you know, we love football because of players like you. When you turn a match on or you pay your ticket and you go to a ground, you want to see players doing what you did. I don't know if it's going to be difficult or traumatic to go back over what happened next and how you had to try to cope with it.
When you thought of, yeah, you got injured, he was a bit injury prone, then he fell away and went down the leagues, it's that hurts, really. I was flying at Blackburn. I was confident as anybody. Give me the ball, let me show off. You know, I'm going to miss out on the England World Cup squad, but I'm going to play for England. I'm really getting my... I'm getting more and more confidence. I'm getting better and better as a player. And then crash, bang, wallop. Instead of going to the World Cup, I decided to go to Rome with my girlfriend, who's now my wife. And did what to get around what the locals did. Used we hired a scooter, went to the Trevi Fountain, Colosseum, everything was brilliant.
We're at different ages, but it's the iconic, you know, image of Rome, Gregory Peck and Audrey Hepburn roaming a holiday on a scooter, you know, a young sort of fit guy and a glamorous girlfriend scooting around the Eternal City.
It was brilliant.
It's what you do.
Yeah, and I was the happiest man in the world. Obviously you're disappointed you haven't gone to the World Cup. But my life was getting complete. I'd found my future wife. I was on top of the world football-wise, confident. Everything was going great. Other than the World Cup, obviously, but everything was in my life was going great and moving forward. Then, crash. I'm involved in a motorcycle or scooter accident and was in a coma for six days. That's how my world went from the highs of the high to the lows of the low.
But in Rome, I presume you don't remember much about
that. I remember that we were going back to the hotel from wherever, Trevi Fountain or wherever we'd been, and my wife's helmet flew off. We weren't looking for it, couldn't find it anywhere. But she speaks Italian, and we there was some police over the other side. We said, look, are we all right to carry on? Our hotel's just round the corner. Are we okay to carry on? Because we haven't got a helmet. And she says, okay, but make sure you get a helmet for driving. That's what she relayed to me. So I says, do you want my helmet to her? And I passed her my helmet. She says, no, you keep your helmet on because you're driving. You might as well. We're only up the road. So we come up. So I kept the helmet on.
Would you be alive today, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I was in a coma for 6 days with a helmet on.
When the moped is tipped by this wildly driven taxi, that helmet saves your life, probably.
Well, yeah, because we weren't travelling, we were stopped at a junction, and if you've ever been to Rome, the cars are bumper to bumper. They just park anywhere and move, bump into cars to move in. So it was just at this crossroads, and I'm edging my way out at the crossroads, and as I'm edging my way out at the crossroads, a taxi comes, and I take the brunt of the taxi on my side of the face helmet, and my wife's thrown off the back. I've taken the impact of the taxi, and I'm in a pool of blood on the floor, and she's... In a way, she sometimes says now it's worse for her because she saw it all, and she was panicky, and to me, I can't remember. I remember up to the point of impact and then nothing else. Then it was in an ambulance. They put a sheet over me, I think, and she said they thought I was dead, and she was screaming and crying, saying, squeeze my hand, if you can hear me, can you hear me? And apparently, I can't remember this, but subconsciously or whatever it was,
something inside you responded
something,
to her.
Yeah, and she said, "He's still alive." Whatever she said, because I was out of it. But they took me into the hospital. Apparently, it was the seediest, worst hospital going. Then it was recovery. It was just slowly but surely getting my memory back, getting my balance, being able to walk again. I was really unsteady on my feet. I used to go for tests at John Moores University in Liverpool. The questions were so basic, problem-solving questions to see how my mind was. And now, it was like for six-year-olds probably that could answer it. And I got most of them wrong, and then bit by bit they would get better and better. But I was told that he's unlikely to ever play football again. I had brain hemorrhage, bleeding in the brain, but it was the frontal lobe, which is where you learn all the normal things that came naturally. So, like, for example, getting in a car, you don't get in a car and think, right, I've got to unlock the car, I've got to put the car, I've got to press the ignition, I've got to put the...
There's no stages, it's fluid.
Automatic, yeah. And my football at the time was automatic. My frontal lobe got damaged, and everything wasn't automatic. Everything was, right, the ball's coming to me now, right, I've got to... So it was, everything was obviously slower because you're thinking about everything. It just wasn't automatic. It was just, this is wrong. I couldn't get away from the spiral that I wasn't invincible. I wasn't this invincible. I could get damaged. I could get hurt. That destroyed my ego, my belief system, how I was continuing on this rise, because my ego and confidence and invincibility was growing and growing and growing. It had just been destroyed.
But then the next stage of your recuperation, rehabilitation or struggles, I don't know what best to term it, was understanding your own psychology, your own mind, because relatively quickly, quicker than anybody thought possible, you were physically fit, you were playing again, scoring again, sometimes scoring brilliantly. But the book makes clear that everything was absolutely wrong in your psychology. You were not only struggling, you were in real pain. And until Steve Peters, which comes a little bit later, you weren't getting either the ear or the shoulder or the advice or the definition of what was going on that you needed.
No, I kept saying, I'm not right. I'm not right. I've missed something. I'm not... I don't feel the same. I'm not the same player. It's just not natural. I'm brain damaged. I'm this, that. And I kept questioning because I wasn't the same player. My bubble had burst. So I couldn't understand why people said, oh yeah, you'll be fine. Just get a few games. You'll get through it. But I was now going on the pitch fearful. And where I wanted the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball. I want to show you what I can do. Give me the ball. Don't give me the ball. Don't give me the ball. Or when you do give me the ball, I'm thinking, right, control it. And it was just, and I couldn't cope with that. It was just, and then playing in front of so many fans and that sound, it was awful. And it was resulted in me getting worse and worse. And then I was on antidepressants and drinking really heavily and trying to get away from it, just because I couldn't cope with what I had been and now what I thought I was. But because I was at so low, I thought, I've got to try whatever I can try. I still think I'm brain damaged. I think a psychologist won't, or a psychiatrist, psychologist, they won't know what's happening inside my head. I know My thoughts were that there's still something wrong. So then I was introduced to Dr. Professor Steve Peters, and I loved spending time with him, and he used the chimp analogy.
Steve Peters is very famous. We can talk more about him because you were one of his earliest sporting patients, and he's gone on to prove his ability, and he's gone on to help a lot of people. But when you talk about that chimp principle, you know, there's a very famous book about it, but not everybody will have experienced it. Now, if, and I stress if, I understand what he's trying to argue is that, again, I recognise that everybody's got a voice or a presence inside their head which will tell them you're wrong or you failed, or it's an anarchic voice, and it seems to be a voice that seizes upon your weakest moments, that kind of, if there's a wound, it'll rub salt in it. Is that, that's not very comprehensive, but is that beginning to explain what he told you when he mentioned this chimp inside you?
Yeah, we've all got a chimp inside us, and when you're in your good times, you can control your chimp. When you're in your negative times, your chimp controls you. But my chimp was controlling me and some. You know, my chimp was too big to be, you know, I couldn't get the better of my chimp. But my, yeah, exactly. And I'd go for a meeting. He was at Sheffield at the time. I'd drive over to Sheffield, have a meeting with him. I'd always say, yeah, but this, or yeah, but that. And he'd have an answer to everything, and talk about my chimp and how to control this and how to control that. And I'd go back really positive and training.
It would be under control to a degree.
Under control to a degree, yeah. And I thought, oh, actually, yeah, he's answered all my questions all my doubts and negativity.
Yeah.
He's given me rational answers too. Built me back. So I'm looking forward to training on a Monday again. So Monday comes, Tuesday comes, Wednesday, and then Thursday. Slowly but surely, I'm deflated again. So and then the following week, I'm going to see Steve. And he inflates me. I get, oh, all right, those questions he's answered rationally that I doubt. Yeah, but I'm feeling okay again, or I feel okay, not necessarily invincible again. I just feel that I can manage.
It's noticeably helping.
Yes. By the end of the week again, I've got to see him, because he's always said himself, if he'd have been there constantly with me, mm-hmm. or at the side of the pitch, or just before I'm going onto the pitch, it may have helped a lot more. I'm now out of the horrific stages when I was crying at night, not sleeping, drinking heavily, and depressed. I can't get this right. I've come out the other side of that now.
What did you learn about yourself?
It was a gradual frustration, and then I wanted to get away from football completely. This is going to cure me. I just got to get away from football. I know that I can't do it anymore. And then I get a phone call from an ex-colleague of mine, Gary Flitcroft. And I think that helped me have a little bit of a direction, I think that helped me maybe get over being so depressed. I mean, I wasn't depressed. Once I'd left football, I thought it was going to cure me. But after 6 months of doing nothing and
you're bored.
You get bored, you do. You think the grass is always greener, but it wasn't. And then I get a phone call out of the blue from Gary Flitcroft saying he was managing Lee Genesis at the time, I think it was, and would I come and play? I said, I don't want to play, but I'll come and be your assistant. And he said, yeah, okay. And will you play a couple of games So I said, well, I'll be a player assistant manager. So I did that. Started doing my coaching badges and got, so there was something that I was focusing on rather than just drifting through life and away. Completely out of football, thinking that was the answer. And then he, few years later, after a couple of promotions, he stepped aside and to concentrate on his property businesses. And then I was thrust into management at Chorley Football Club, which I spent 3 years, had three successful years there.
Promotion in 1 year?
We got into playoff final and got beat in extra time.
I wish I hadn't raised it now.
Yeah, so.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, it was three successful years. A few disagreements with the board.
Par for the course in management.
As in football, as not as typical in football. And ended up resigning after a summer of putting a really fantastic team together. I brought in two or three extra players that maybe gave us a chance the following season.
But you weren't able to see the fruit
I wasn't able to see the fruits, but No, it was good. It's good that they got promoted there. You know, I enjoy my time. But it gave me a focus on something.
We draw into a close because I want people to understand what you communicate and what I think is a really captivating, really page-turning autobiography. I don't know where you want to go, but I think people, because some younger listeners won't have had the privilege that Neil and I had of seeing that you were an extremely good footballer, but also somebody who lived inside this odd, lovable, eccentric world of football. So choose.
The things you can come across in football is crazy. Fergie, what could have been if I'd have chose to go to Manchester United rather than Crystal Palace? It is hindsight again. It is hypothetical. Could it?
He handled it quite well, didn't he?
I didn't. I was petrified. I was in Michael Knighton's office. My dad told me that if I'd chosen Crystal Palace, I'd need to call Sir Alex and tell him that you were going to sign for Crystal Palace.
I love that. I think now that's good.
Knowing that the hairdryer treatment and that was well documented.
Yeah,
and
I've had
that. I'm sat in Carlisle United's boardroom at 18, 19 years old. Hi, Sir Alex. I've chose Crystal Palace over you.
Really?
Yeah. It's just because I want to play first-team football and continue playing first-team football like I have been at Carlisle United. And he says, why would I be signing you if I didn't want you to play for my first team? And I says, well, I've made my decision. He says, okay, son. Well, I wish you all the best and hopefully our paths will cross again. Good luck to you. And that was...
Classy.
Classy, yeah, brilliant.
If only Wembley hadn't been under reconstruction. But in Cardiff, you won a beautiful final. One where I was very heavily rooting for Blackburn Rovers, given my dislike for the manager of Spurs that day. But you scored, you made, you did exactly what I got. You talk about dreams. What lives with you from that day in Cardiff when Blackburn play Tottenham in the League Cup final?
You mentioned about people being nervous or petrified and Terry Butcher and doing meditation and what have you. But I felt the bigger the game, the more comfortable I was, because you were achieving more. So it worked in a bizarre, weird way for me. It's the final, closed roof, it's going to be capacity. We're the underdogs, we've got nothing to lose. We're playing Tottenham and, you know, who are heavily favourites to win this.
Well,
we're going to go out and give it everything. And got the early goal. I scored the first goal, they equalised, and then managed to set Coley up for the winner. And winning a major trophy, or the Football League trophy, was I'm getting better and better, and it's my ego, my invincibility is growing. And shortly after that, it was the England and growing still. And from Carlisle to Palace to Blackburn, then to the cup final, then to England, it was a gradual, or not quite quick, rise to getting bigger. And
no matter his gruff warning, that should have been a day for tears from your dad. It should have been.
Well, he said he was close, but I couldn't see whether he's lying to me.
I think you've nailed it there.
Yeah.
You've nailed it there. Now, I mean, obviously the best goal of the three is yours. That goes without saying. But Andy Cole's finish was quite nifty.
It was nice, but I had a goal and assist though, didn't I? He just had a go.
Love it, love it.
Yes, it's time for the Bet365 question. Thanks to our sponsors at the world's favourite online betting company, they wanted to know more about Matt's special partnership with goal-scoring legend Andrew Cole. So we asked him.
That's what I want to finish on. Like, you played with some super players, but you... Dwight York came at a point when you were fighting the fight that we've described. Andy Cole, not so. Describe playing with Andy Cole. Describe. Do you think it's possible that people underestimate a little bit about how good a striker he was, how good a finisher he was? Did you enjoy working with him?
I think that my most successful season was when Coley came. We had a player called Chicho Grabi who hadn't settled. I felt as soon as Coley came in, it clicked and it worked, and I felt I'm playing with a good quality striker. And it was only for one season, because I got the accident after that. But what might have been if I'd have not had the accident? I could have struck up a really good striking relationship with him, and I was robbed of that as well. So, but frustrating, but like I say, he was a quality player.
Well, we find ourselves here somewhere that is beautiful. Would you say, happily married, dad of three kids, you achieve brilliant things that either of us would risk a puffin bite in order to get. It's really thrilling that one, you've managed to achieve what you've managed to achieve, because that, a personal battle, is probably the hardest battle any of us will ever face. And it's exciting to think that football's going to benefit from you, because you left the idea that management, coaching, call it what you will, and they're two different skills, is something that still attracts you. So I hope that that's going to be the next time we see you triumphing in the sport that you love. We are going to, at some stage, see you coaching and managing, I hope.
In some capacity, that's the idea, hopefully before too long.
Well, in that case, meantime, until that does happen, I'd urge people to go and seek your autobiography, not as a quid pro quo, because you've talked to us, but because it's really enjoyable, intriguing, and the pages fly by. It's not always the easiest read, but it's true. And to my way of thinking, it's a good life. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Backpage. Our music is by Beerjacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.